Hi, welcome to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. This is Dan Zhang, signing on for Subversity. Today we're going to have a look back at the good old days of the LA Times. It stopped running the Orange County edition this past Tuesday and killed it, although it was a death that probably many predicted, and it had been a slow death since they moved the Orange County content into the California section, and now the California section is no longer a section except on Sundays, and the OC content seems very minimal. And with us is a longtime listener to Subversity, David Reyes, who has worked for the LA Times for decades. Welcome.
Thank you.
And you've won Pulitzers for covering Latinos in Southland.
Southern California.
And also the riots?
The riots, 1992 riots in LA.
Yeah, wow. And how does it feel to win a Pulitzer?
It's the greatest feeling. I mean, you're on top of your profession, and it's kind of like you're getting recognition finally from the nation's top people in the media.
And do you think the Times Now will win any more Pulitzers?
I think it's doubtful, but it won't be impossible. They still have a lot of top reporters working for them. But they're having to deal with a lot more obstacles in the way of this economic crisis and low budget, even for the LA Times. As you know, you probably heard that they did away with the Washington Bureau. LA Times does not have its own Washington Bureau. It's a shared bureau now with Chicago Tribune reporters. Because of the constant cuts since about the year 2000, we've lost staff 10% per year.
Oh, wow.
So we have now almost half the staff we did in 2001. At that time, we had a little bit more than 900 editorial employees. Now we have maybe 550. It's all for the sake of cutting the budget and survivability for the LA Times.
What I don't understand is... you know, this cut in the OC edition, or the killing of it, coincides with Orange County becoming more ethnically diverse. And is there a correlation? I wonder. Yeah. I mean, before it was considered this rich white community, and it was competing with the Register to try to make money, and now it's given up?
Well, it's given up, regionally speaking.
Yeah.
You know, in the old days, and there were old days, our marketers and managers would always hold up a map of Orange County, and showed us where we were concentrated in. And if they looked at the 405 freeway as it went from west to down east, and we're heavily concentrated with our subscribers in the beach communities. Costa Mesa, Solana Beach, Newport Beach, heavy, and then down in South County. What we recognized also at that time from a marketing standpoint was that the inland areas, Santa Ana, Garden Grove, Westminster, Anaheim, we were weak, and we didn't have good market penetration. That was the Orange County Register's bread and butter area. The LA Times never found the secret to success for getting into those markets. And at a time when the building of Ladera Heights in South County, when you had huge developments going in of 8,000 homes.
Ladera Ranch, right?
Ladera Ranch, Marblehead.
Yeah.
I mean, at one time there were like 20,000 homes that were slated to be built over a period of time. It was like at that moment, the Los Angeles Times was pulling back its number of reporters, editors, photographers. And I was not on the business side. Right. They made those decisions, and it should have been a time, in my opinion, that we should have just gone out and tried to encourage more subscribers with all these new residents living in these new developments at that time.
They could give free, trial runs.
Yeah. In the Orange County Register, to its credit, that's when they started doing some of that. They'll give you a free subscription, even for 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And also, they came up with this ingenious plan at Taco Bell's, where they would have like a news rack-like advertisement there, would say Orange County Register, in partnership with all the Taco Bell's here in Orange County. I mean, you know, tough times, you got to make some really ingenious...
Synergy.
Yeah, exactly. Synergy was the word in those days.
How about Newport Beach, you know, like the core of the rich, I suppose? Did LA Times do better there than Register?
We did, although they may argue that we were neck and neck in there. Yeah. we didn't cater to their... to their interests, you have to understand. We still were journalistically solvent, that we would do our own news gathering, and we didn't care who our areas were, be it they Newport Beach or Santa Ana.
Although LA, they did these community pages, right? That was quite interesting.
Do you remember those?
Yeah,
right.
And I've written op-eds for the Times before, and they always would call it community voices. And so, but it was on the op-ed page, and sometimes it would even be in the Metro page.
Right.
I mean, they did print it both in the OC edition and then the LA edition.
And sad to say, those voices are still being sound somewhere, but apparently not in the LA Times.
On the web?
the web.
Alternative papers. You know,
Well, the web, that's been the monster for the big daily newspapers, is how to, it's kind of like trying to scale a mountain.
Did you blog? Did you end up blogging?
Yes, blog? Ended up blogging, ended up feeding the blog. It'd have to be one of my last stories in the summer was the toll road hearing. So, they had one down in San Diego.
And Brent Center, they had one.
True.
That was your last story.
True, and we had to literally, pay attention to what people were saying and at the same time write something or call it in to feed the blog that we got ongoing.
Call it in and somebody types it in.
Somebody will type it in.
Oh, these days you could do it on your BlackBerry. And
you can't. You can't. There was no III at the hearing in San Diego, so it was difficult.
Oh.
You had to like literally leave your seat, miss what the people were saying and testifying, go to another building, and then send it, and then walk all the way back. And I chose not to. I just chose to use a cell phone and call it in.
Oh, these days, if you had wireless or whatever, you could sit there.
Well, apparently that's the future. You know, about 2 years ago, they were teaching us to take a digital film a lot of VCR work, and so that you were one person, one reporter in an automobile. If you're sent to a car crash, a plane accident, or fire, you wouldn't have to call in a reporter. And the same worked for the reporter. They go out and they have all this equipment, and they almost can do a stand-up right there without having a reporter around, because they just give you the visual image. And they could chip in because they've got all their high technology, a lot more than what reporters had. And we can give you a visual picture through words.
Yeah.
Doesn't work as well as if you see it. And then they put it right on the web and boom.
Yeah, it's like indie media. I guess they copy from indie media.
Right, right.
And CNN now, I guess, has
citizen
submissions.
Yeah. I remember going to a lot of public hearings where the indie media were just light years ahead of us.
I know.
I mean, the guy was, he was on my left, and I'm here thinking of what to do, and he's messaging his friend back in, at that time in San Diego, and then they're already putting up like a webcast of what is going on, almost as we speak.
We could do that here, but
in real time.
I haven't done
In real time, with commentary.
I know. And they didn't go to journalism school.
No. We weren't the little We were behind in technology for our reporters.
How about the Orange County office? Are they going to close that down? Or the printing press is there, right?
Right. That seems to be our saving grace.
Yeah,
Dan.
Yeah. I know. That's what I was thinking. I mean, there's no evidence there is an Orange County presence in the paper anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of
even the address.
I know.
It says complain to whatever or contact. There's no address anymore.
I know. It's kind of like being being a small animal at the L.A. Zoo, but everybody passes your exhibit in favor of the elephant.
That's a good analogy.
And the elephant is our printing presses. You know, they're new. They were newer than many other facilities in Orange County. So they've entered into contract arrangements with other media, I should say. I mean, there's plums out there in that regard to print some of the Orange County Register, to print, some editions or sections of the New York Times, perhaps other media. I mean, that's what's being looked at.
Oh, I see.
So that continues to run because that's a heck of a lot of, it represents a huge financial investment.
Yeah.
As far as the number of reporters in Orange County, that's another matter.
It's like, what, 10 left? Or
well, under half a dozen who do daily assignments.
Wow.
And you have to understand that you're talking to a reporter who, when I came in 79, I lived and worked there through the boom boom 80s and 90s, we had 39 metro reporters at its peak. That's just who do news.
Wow.
We also had a calendar staff.
Yeah.
We had photography there. We had a sports staff. It was viable. There's about more than, I forgot how many, it was almost 200. And the whole plant itself had like 1,100 people there at the Orange County Edition. That means truck drivers, printers, and everybody.
Wow.
And as new technology took over, we lost our printers, the people who were still, it changed everything. And then with the new owner, Tribune, since 2000, we've been losing a lot of staff.
Security is very tight now. When you can't just walk in. I used to just walk into this editorial room.
that's the unfortunate thing from 9/11.
Yeah.
Is that, all your mail gets opened.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it gets inspected. You don't want to see any fine white powdery substances there.
Yeah.
Or hard objects that they cannot x-ray. Meet us at the door, Dan.
I have to call in first. Yeah. Wow. So what's happening to the archives? You used to clip. Do you know what happens to that? The local ones, they had clipping files and stuff.
Yeah, we had a marvelous library in hard copy. As you well know, the LA Times digitally
it's on Procress.
And electronically, we can go back to 1985, and it's there.
But we can even go back further.
We can go back even further. Our limitation when I was there for most of my lifetime career was we can go to 1985, and prior to that, we had to go to hard copy.
Yeah.
So you either, if it was an L.A. story, you had to go to call up the L.A. library, and they got fantastic archives.
Yeah.
But there was a little delay there, wait a day or so, to get that information or faxed over to you or emailed to you. Locally in Orange County, we've got some of the stories since the inception of the edition.
When did that start?
Oh, boy, you would ask.
80s, right?
Yeah, no, it was prior to 78.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because they already celebrated the 30th. So it was a while back. Those are the times when they would cover the Santa Ana courthouse.
Oh, yeah.
And according to the stories from the old reporters, they would type it out, roll up their copy, and find a bus driver and give him some money to take to on his route down into Los Angeles, and then have another editorial person meet him there, then pick that up and take it over to the downtown building.
Is that the equivalent of a carrier pigeon?
No. I mean, that's,
wow, that's crazy.
So in like, what, 30, 35 years, look at how we've, the momentum we've gained from having electronic media.
But do you know what will happen to all those clippings then? Or they just...
I do not.
Yeah.
I do not. One of the sad things, and one of these, marketing ideas that I and other reporters had is that we're sitting, I think, on a gold mine.
Yeah.
From those people who like history,
yeah,
who like to, you know, delve into libraries and find nice, different things. I mean, this is Orange County. It had its own history, you know, and we were part of that. And that's out there, that's sitting there archivally, and is it being offered to the public at large? Is it being offered to the subscribers? No. One day when we opened up the archives, meaning I could go and I could sit at my desk in front of my computer at work.
Yeah.
And I could look up, there was an oil company, and you could find the name of the person who first had that property if they were newsworthy. And I'm talking about different people in Long Beach, Redondo Beach, whose names, the Doheny's, you know, you can go back because the LA Times covered them at your desk.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, perhaps we put in Dan Tsang. Maybe the Tsangs had some family history or that you never heard about or others. And I had hits on my own father.
Oh, wow.
And I never knew that he was, this was a tiny little paragraph mention.
Yeah.
And I go, what was that all about? That was out of the late 50s, 1960s. It's phenomenal, the amount of information that somebody can pick up right here in Southern California. And they're not making it available to subscribers, but we're losing our subscriptions, right? Yeah. We're losing our subscribers. Subscribers.
Even the former reporters are canceling.
offer it as a little... you know, a little taste of not a gimmick, but offer it something like a sweet hors d'oeuvre that someone like to eat at a reception. It's kind of like with a subscription, you get half a year's worth to signing on and looking at what the LA Times had in the old days. It's phenomenal. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Oh, give them a front page of the day they were born, you know.
Oh, yeah, you could do that, too.
Yeah, we're... whatever. Yeah. Well, we're lucky because we subscribe to the ProQuest online edition. So we have the New York Times, the LA Times, and some other papers back to the beginning digitally.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not available to the public unless they come into the library or they are...
Or at UCI?
Yeah.
Really?
You can come in, yeah.
It's not available to the public.
It is.
It is.
On site, it is.
Yeah, I don't have to be a student or registered or anything.
No, you don't have to.
Wow.
It's great because, I as you know, I was doing this immigration exhibit, and I didn't even know that Chinatown was burned down in Santa Ana in 1906, the year of the San Francisco earthquake. And I looked up the LA Times coverage, and it said chinks would demand to be compensated, you know. And so you can get the cultural context by looking at the period.
Yeah, the LA Times was never known for its sensitivity in those days. And that was another thing I looked up. The Sleepy Lagoon tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
In the Zoot Suits.
Yeah.
And
50 or 49?
Yeah, 40 right around in there. 40, 47, 49, the sailors, the riots in Long Beach.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of textural history that I think any of today's students would really be interested in reading.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's real.
It's real,
It was real. And this is it's followed by the reporting of the
day. Primary, actually, in some sense, it's become a primary source, even though it's secondary source in some way you're reporting about, but it's become primary because it's, you know, they were there at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you must have known Hector, who is the reporter who was killed in the L.A. riots, right? Was it?
Oh, Salazar?
Salazar.
Rubin,
yeah. Not Hector.
Yeah.
Did you know him and work
with
him?
I knew him.
Yeah.
He was... even then, he was just a good guy and later become an icon for Latino journalists.
Yeah, yeah.
The Silver Dollar Cafe. They project the tear gas projectile from the L.A. County Sheriff's Deputy right there on down in Whittier Boulevard in East Los Angeles. These things you remember, you don't forget.
Did you cover that?
No, I was in...
You were later. No. You were in another period.
Right. I was a student. Those are my student days.
Oh, yeah. What made you go into... Well, you were a student
when I was young.
I'm still a student.
We all life. Are. Yeah, we all are.
Yes. What made you go into journalism?
Well, I'm unusual. My dad was a truck driver.
Yeah.
Estacio Reyes.
Oh, yeah.
And in L.A. And I followed in his footsteps. And he took me aside one day, and he said, son, I didn't work 40 years as a truck driver so you could be what I am. You know, I want you to be something better.
Wow.
And he told me that. I took it to heart. And the next year, I had already attended East L.A. College but dropped out.
Yeah.
So he gave me the heart-to-heart, and I enrolled at L.A. City College. In the evening, I took easy courses because I never enjoyed school. I took public relations and photography. I got an A in public relations. It was my first ever A in college.
Wow.
I needed that.
Yeah.
And the instructor said, you know, you kind of have a way of with writing. I really recommend that you take journalism. And I said, well, all right. And so the next semester I took journalism, and that was day. During the day, and I got another A, and I got kind of bitten by
Rewarded by the A's, and now you're editing consultant, also.
Editing and doing some consulting work, a little investigative research.
Oh, on what topics?
Any topics.
Oh.
Yeah, this is new.
Oh.
New to me. I left the Times in September.
Uh huh. And it's a freelance thing, right?
Right.
So it's not this, the New York Times was writing about Mother Jones and doing nonprofit investigative reporting. That seems to be a trend.
That's a trend right now for a lot of reporters, ex-reporters from the LA Times and others. And they're seeking their next place in their careers at these nonprofits, which is pretty good if they can make
it. Yeah, there's one based in D.C., but it has regional branches.
Right. Yeah. From what I understand, the pay is pretty well.
Pretty good.
It's as much or a little better than what the LA Times, and they pay into a 401k, though I'm not so sure what, given these economic times, if that's good or bad. But that's a good avenue.
Yeah.
If you know, other than starting out and just on your own and doing something online.
Yeah. Did you want to do that instead?
No.
No, you want to be, you don't want to.
I like just being a freelance and doing online, try to break into this online world that I really never knew anything about.
Oh, yeah.
And as you know, bloggers don't have credentials.
Yeah, anybody can be.
So to speak, it's kind of anybody can be. I mean, you know, my daughters were they kept prompting me, you know, Dad, you got to start a blog. You got to, 10 years, 12 years ago, I go, how am I going to do that?
Get a Facebook account.
Yeah, exactly.
I just got one.
And look how easy it is.
I know, you know? It's incredible.
Look how easy
I'm addicted to it now.
Yeah, but the object is getting your name and your blog known.
Mm.
You know, you have to link it on with somebody whose blog or website is well known.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of the most successful ones out here, I think, is LA Observe, Kevin Rodrick's.
Yeah.
It's a great
looks
a great
at the
site.
Media, right?
Oh yeah, also, and it links on with so many other people.
Yeah.
Plus, in Orange County, we got some good blogs. Matthew Cunningham's, Red County OC
Red
blog.
County.
I know. It's political, and it's to the right. But it does. What other blog would give you that kind of a political news about who wants to be the next assembly person? Or a city council person, then there's also the OC Liberal.
Yeah.
But
how about what did you guys think of the OC Weekly when you were at the Times?
We read it. Yeah, I read it every Thursday. Yeah.
Did you have to hide it while you were reading it? No.
Oh, you know, in the beginning when it came out, they were viewed as another competitor.
Oh, really?
And the edict at the LA Times was we could not cooperate with them. And watch yourself, because they don't have any journalistic credentials, and even on the telephone, they will quote you, even though before they didn't tell you. They didn't notify you that, oh yeah, by the way, I may use this for a story, and that seemed to be the only issues that I had with them. Then all of a sudden, they became very good, you know, and it's still alive today.
Well, now Gustavo is on some, you know, advisory board for the Times.
Yeah, he writes an opinion from time to time. It's odd. It's kind of like if you stay liberal long enough, you become part of the
establishment.
Part of the establishment.
Sell out.
Some say. I wouldn't say yeah.
Some say, yeah.
Yeah.
But when you were covering Orange County, what you actually were the first to do a surfing column, huh?
Right. How's that for unusual?
I know, that's what I always thought you did. You know, when I first met you, I thought you were the surfing reporter. Because, you know, you came from, I thought you covered Huntington Beach.
And we covered everything, though. I mean, yeah. I wish they would still have a surfing column. You know, that was at least I was reaching out.
To get Rohrabacher to write it.
Oh, God.
Dana.
Yeah, Dana Rohrabacher. Congressman Dana Rohrabacher.
He's always portrayed in the OC Weekly in the surf outfit.
Yeah. Well, he keeps that surfboard in his office, too. He has one.
You covered immigration. So what was it like when you covered that topic?
It was a lot different. You got to understand that in the late 70s, early 80s, the county was still, you still had a lot of strawberry fields, farm fields. South County was still a lot of nurseries, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then with the, as the county built up, more homes, more streets, a few freeways, the construction brings in day laborers.
Mm.
And you're, you know, as the more construction and development you have, you're going to need more, more help.
Was there was no resistance then?
There was resistance. There was always clamor. That will always be so. Let's just say the INS at that time had the upper hand. You know, they had the money, the technique, and it was as if the immigration attorneys would try to stop. You know, you can't just go into production companies and assembly plants and just throw a raid.
Yeah.
They were at that time, the INS were pretty aggressive, more aggressive than they are now with that type of raid
strategy. I thought there's still, but there are still raids.
Not as many as there were in the old days. For some reason, they would seem to know when the farmers had the most number of potentially undocumented immigrants, and they would come at that time. They would have their buses parked there. They were also problems with how they did their raids and roundups. I remember one time in the city of Orange, the El Medina area, they had a lot of apartment complexes, and the INS people broke windows. They went in without warrants, and they say they were following illegal immigrants in. We didn't know, so we also had to put in, it was alleged that they did these things. But we had photographs and of people, how they broke the windows, and then we had testimony from the people themselves that some of them who were here legally.
Yeah, sure.
And saying that they were harassed and questioned. And then there was an issue of one of the churches where they had gone in, and that riled up the community, too.
But there was
gone in looking for an illegal immigrant who they say had ran into there, and that created a big furor.
Was there, there wasn't a Barbara Coe in those days?
No. That's a phenomenon. She is a phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I remember when you were on this, when you were covering me on the show, you came to the station, and I had an immigration attorney, I thought, Rauch was his name, remember? And he was sitting there. What did you think of the show then? Why did you cover it?
KUCI?
Yeah, or my show.
Your show?
Yeah.
Well,
the segue here.
Yeah, it is. Subversity in Orange County. That seems to be more of a bumper sticker, doesn't it? It's kind of like, is there? Is there really?
There was actually. From this immigration exhibit,
yeah.
I dug up a socialist organizing committee in from Santa Ana, and the guy retired and lives in Huntington Beach, and he gave us boxes and boxes of socialist materials. Yeah, and he had this lake. What do you call it? One of those river view places in the edge of Huntington Beach.
Well,
he retired, but his wife was blacklisted as a teacher, called a communist in the LA system.
I think you touched on this, Dan, a little bit earlier when you said, as the county becomes more diverse, we need to hear all these voices, even if they're different than ours or than the ones that you want to that you believe in.
Yeah, I mean, subversity was made up of by a graduate student here. He coined the term subversive, diverse, perverse, and university. So it captures, I think, in essence, what this show is about.
Let me get that again. Perverse.
Perversity, diversity, university, and subversity.
We should market some of that.
I know. I was kind of floored when I went on the internet. And it was a business game in a management school called Subversity. I thought they had stolen my name. I should have copyrighted it.
I mean, they did.
I know. I think we were the first. But anyway, we had. You did cover some perverse news stories. You covered, if we call it perversity. These days, gays want to get married, but in those days, they just wanted to dance.
Exactly.
In Disneyland.
I know.
What was that like when you covered that story?
Oh, I mean, to go against the power that is the Disneyland, I think those persons, especially I remember the attorney Andrew Wexler in 1980, who filed a lawsuit on behalf of two people. I think one of whom you know.
Yes.
So they can allow same-sex dancing at Disneyland, of all places. of all places, and it was kind of like. What?
Did you think...
What?
Did you think they had a chance when
I did not.
You covered it? Mm.
I did not. Disneyland is, up until a few years ago, has always had the reputation, if not attitude, that you can file any lawsuit against us, but you won't win.
And they also make people shave. I mean, they can't have any hair.
Yeah.
You have to look clean-cut all-American, I guess. Yeah. But now they have a gay dance day, actually. I mean, you can rent the park. Yeah, the gays can actually rent. Yeah. They have a gay cast members group. We have their papers.
Well, I don't know. Collections. Is that more green power than gay power? Green as in greenbacks?
I don't know if their pay went up. They're just exploiting.
Well, that's a recognition in of itself of... this nation's one of the largest amusement parks.
Yeah,
that says okay, it's a civil rights issue, and we'll believe in it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were kind of progressive. We actually have in the studio somebody who's worked organizing workers at Disneyland and the Disney parks. John Earl, who's also an alternative reporter and editor from OC Voice now.
Right.
And he was also the one that probably has been running around videotaping council meetings and putting them on the web.
Well, we've been reporting on council meetings. That's one thing that we're going to get into is doing just what you said there. But I just wanted to say, getting back to the Los Angeles Times and what's happened over the years, I grew up in Claremont. In the 60s, and I remember Los Angeles Times going, I remember various stages, at least my perception as I was growing up, I saw the Times in the 60s, it became this really big, fat paper, on Wednesdays and Thursdays, that paper was so big, it was almost like the Sunday edition, there was so much advertising in there, and lots of news, they had 24 news bureaus around the world, and they listed them all. They'd have at least two editions a day with big screaming headlines, on the street editions. And LA Times played, I think then, as a newspaper, played a big role in a lot of people's lives. I was a little different as a kid, and that instead of collecting stamps or baseball cards, I was collecting newspapers, which is kind of perverse, maybe, or something. But
yeah, that's what I do.
Well, that fits right in with the show, I guess.
Yes, it is.
But I remember, you know, every day seeing the Times, and I remember going back to the Watts Rebellion, or some people call it riot, whatever. I remember just looking through the spread there in the paper, the photographs, and that's where I got my first lesson in the history of slavery and Jim Crow and so on in this country from my father, because I was sitting there looking at this spread, and I, as a 10-year-old, I was saying, look at what all these bad people are doing. And my mother and father said, now, John, you don't know the other side of the story. And then my dad set me down for the next hour and gave me this whole history, which actually changed my view on my whole world view. But I also remember, every day in high school or reading the Los Angeles Times during the Vietnam War and during the development of Watergate, and seeing the headlines every day about the plane shot, U.S. plane shot down over Hanoi and so on, and seeing the developments in Watergate there. My friends and I, my fellow nerd friends, were collecting all the Conrad cartoons, and that was, I still think, is probably the best editorial cartoonist there was out there.
Yeah.
And then seeing the circulation of the Times, it was soaring during those years, you know, got up in the 70s or 80, by 1980, I think, to around a million or so.
1.2 million.
Yeah, daily. Yeah. And then seeing sometime in the 80s, this gradual, very gradual decline, I think, you know, people seemed to be running the news who were not necessarily the people who should have been running the news. They were more interested in writing about Staples, maybe. Well, that little scandal came later, I guess. But this gradual decline, and then in the last 4 or 5 years, that's been more marked than ever. Although I think until recently, it's still, maybe even now, it still ranks far better than the Register in terms of the kind of coverage, you know, national and so on. But although that may be changing now too, unfortunately. But so there's been this great change, and I think the newspaper had and the calendar section, this big fat calendar section, which everybody wanted to read. The calendar section, that was, you know, better than what the LA Weekly had or anything like that, as far as I'm concerned. And they maybe kind of picked up on that later, but the paper played a big role in many people's lives, and I think that role now in newspapers in general is really diminishing. And then, of course, the question is how to keep the role of news gathering in general in the public eye and make it viable economically and all that. But
yeah, what you say is so true. It's we have underestimated the impact of a newspaper in society. Even today, there are people, when I go to lunches and stuff, they go, what's the future of your newspaper? What am I going to read when I'm having my breakfast?
Yeah.
What am I going to talk about at the family, at the kitchen table with my children? And I'm a reporter. I'm a low person in the hierarchy of a newspaper. And what you touched on is that you have people making some big decisions. I don't think the Los Angeles Times ever really knew what it wanted to be. They had good ideas and assumptions. Some of those didn't play out to be true. At one point in time, you remember Otis Chandler, publisher, up until 1980, member of the big family, the Chandler family, the Buffums, etc. At that time, the idea was to have California be California's paper. We have the headquarters in Los Angeles. We're branching out into Orange County. We had a big bureau in San Diego. We had the same in the San Fernando Valley, something in Oxnard, a small bureau in San Francisco, and then Sacramento. Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice, given potential of this, is to have printing plants also, or one more printing plant, and then have a statewide newspaper with different editions.
Well, I remember traveling as a kid, and then you could get the LA Times in San Francisco on the street. You could get it in Sacramento, Stockton on the street. You could get it in Arizona. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was all over the place, you know, and And so, yeah, it's certainly changed. Now you're lucky to get it. I guess, well, you can still get it in the newsstands in Orange County, but
But look at the fill-in here. The fill-in is with these different websites. OC Voice, yours.
Yeah.
OC Weekly. You know, if you can't get... People of my generation, I'm talking the baby boomers, we always wanted something hard, something in our hand to take with us or to read with the morning coffee.
Sure.
You know, this the new Kindle, the BlackBerry's too tiny to read the whole, you know, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. There's got to be a kind of device that oldsters like myself can carry around that I could read comfortably.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're mainly a print version still, and in fact, they're still developing our website, so we're kind of up on the times, but not quite on that. But I still prefer. There's got to be a combination of these two, of the hard copy and the print copy, rather, and the internet. They've got to somehow complement one another. But I don't think giving up the print version is going to be viable either. I think we need the print version. I think it has a lot more influence and on people even today. I mean, it's easier first of all to target with that. I mean, you know a lot more about who's reading that paper than you do on the internet. They could be coming from China or South Africa or whatever, and that's great, but that doesn't do much for your advertising and your market here.
Well,
you know.
So. Yeah, reporters argue that one of the bigger flubs that newspapers did not do was to immediately put a financial wall up on the online, a little bit like Wall Street Journal, that it will cost you money to look at what the newspaper produces. Not a lot of money, but it will cost you some amount of money. And then you'd get the best of both worlds. You still get a revenue generator, which would help, but...
I think it goes back to the beginning when they tried that, and what was it, Microsoft or something, they tried doing that, and it didn't work at first because it was so new and all that, and they just kind of dropped the whole model.
But New York Times tried it with the op-eds, making people pay for those to join, and then you had to pay, and they dropped it eventually. And now they're giving away the New York Times online for decades.
But maybe the idea of, you know, 99 cents for an article or something, so, you know, like when you download a song or something like that, or even 50 cents or something. You put your credit card on there and buy a chunk, and then there's
like
that
iTunes,
the iTunes version of.
I heard the Kindle too actually has audio capability, although they're disabling it for some. So you could. I've gone to some. We have some Procris or whatever sites we have in the library that we license, and from France, for instance, and you can click on the article and it will read it out in French.
Huh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You get the audio in that language. So that could be applied to the online edition of the Times or whatever, or the current edition, then, you know, people could learn English somewhere else, read it out. Maybe you'd get translations even.
Yeah. I don't think the Times was completely... you know, backward on this internet thing. I remember seeing a wonderful video version of their series on ocean pollution. I believe that's what it was.
And that was
a beautiful job of that on the internet, and that was very, very well organized, informative, and very interesting. And I think the Tribune did something similar on some other issue, but oil or something. But I mean, so there's some. It's just that there hasn't nobody's. Seems to have found a perfectly or a efficiently working model that can account for all the variables that there are on the internet, and that's the problem. And then there's also the issue of, well, where's the internet going to go in the next 5 years? Are people like me and the OC Voice or smaller bloggers, are they still going to have the kind of access they have now, or is that going to be kind of gradually choked off? As I mean, who knows what the model is going
to
be
on the archives? I was wondering what would happen to the photo archives in the early times. Right now, the Orange County folks that take the pictures, are they in they're in the Orange County? Can reporters from LA access those photographs? It's just in a huge database.
It will
be part of everything.
But the not all old photographs were kept, and I don't know the cutoff year.
Kept. You mean as digital?
Right, right.
Oh, right. Wow.
Even they were also digitizing some photographs, say, of important people.
Yeah.
Some old mayors out of Los Angeles.
Yeah. Because that could be actually a revenue generator. You could have a page, like Flickr was showing little tiny pictures of people in Orange County, and then if you want to buy the full resolution one, you can pay, and then magazines still pay for pictures.
Well,
exactly.
I mean, the biggest fire in Orange County, the smallest, the biggest wildlife fire. I remember the Anaheim apartment complex fire that ran through. I mean, it left hundreds and hundreds of apartment people.
The 60s?
Yeah, it was, it was in the early 90s.
Oh, okay.
Or late 80s. Maybe in late 80s. And remember that at that time we had the common attics, so that a fire started in one apartment, went up to the other common attic. The whole complex took place. It kind of almost inundated the fire departments that answered the calls to that. And where were you when that happened? Kind of one of those things. It was a big fire. No, people will say, was there a lot of deaths? No, there weren't. But it's some of the Orange County history.
Yeah,
that led to, in essence, some laws. There were laws on the books at that time, but kind of like a resurgence of why you should not have common attics in apartment complexes. Sure. So these kinds of things were interesting. That they're Orange County history, because people think of Southern California, they don't think that Orange County has its own history.
Right. And I just had a group of senior citizens from a Japanese-American church, and they were formed to serve, in 1902, they started to serve celery pickers, Japanese bachelors in celery farms in Huntington Beach. And now the church moved to Santa Ana. And the oldest person that came was 91.
Amazing. I mean,
and so all that history, you know?
Yeah.
And I never knew about it, you know? I mean, I never knew that it still existed. And these were people who were children of the, unless they were the, you know, I mean, they were 80s and 90s. Some, most of the people in the room, I think, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, they came to see that exhibit. And the speaker was Mitsu Yamada, who teaches here, and she's 86.
Huh.
And we have an exhibit on her before of her life in internment camps, and she does Amnesty International work.
Well, there's a lot of Orange County history you can get from looking back in the newspaper archives, whether it's the Times or the Register or other papers that no longer exist. There used to be many of them, because the histories you get from the cities themselves the people who are related to the founders are usually very sanitized, and who founded what, and you know, and they were a wonderful family, and you know, and all that. But they don't have a lot of undertones there that are left out. But you can get the hints of that from the old time coverage, going back to the 30s, like the labor struggle here and all that. Fascinating to read between the lines in some of those stories. You can kind of tell, you know, about the vigilantes and everything.
It says shoot to kill, sheriff shoot to kill.
Yes, that was it. Yeah, yeah.
But who's going to do that kind of interviewing now and
that's
reporting?
The
I mean, the
that's the question.
LA Times says almost nothing on the reporters have to compete with the LA reporters, right, to get stuff in.
No, they do.
Yeah.
Because there's only one section, the A section, that's got to take in foreign, state, and region.
Well, isn't this kind of a reverse snowball effect going on here? That, I mean, if you reduce that Orange County reporting, then the circulation is going to go down even more in Orange County. So what is, if I can ask, what is the circulation in the Times in Orange County?
In
subscription
County?
Versus stand news
these days? Yeah.
It fluctuates. It fluctuates to about 175,000 daily.
And the Register is three times that, twice that?
I think at least twice.
That's subscription or the sales?
Subscription.
Oh, subscription.
Well, actually, that is, that's the press run.
That's the press run, okay.
Oh, press run, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. And when I joined in 1979, it was 181,000 daily, and about 250,000 weekend Sundays, mm-hmm. going up to three. And then there was a big push, and we made 200,000, 300,000, 200,000 daily, 300,000 weekends. Wow. It was a tough animal in Orange County, because then along with that came the competition from the Orange County Register. So. Yeah.
A lot of people, a lot of the, I know some of the reporters went on to the New York Times.
A lot of them?
Yeah.
During the cuts.
Oh.
During the cuts, naturally, and also during the cuts. Reporters are diva-oriented sometimes.
Were you jealous of those? were you jealous of those that left?
No, I was not.
sorry.
I knew them, and... some of them were still growing in their careers.
Yeah, they started at the Times.
Right. They just either got to because it was a better offer, or they had roots back east, or they something happened at the LA Times where they were no longer happy, and so they left. You can't stop those folks.
Yeah. Were there stories where they rewrote that you didn't like?
Here?
Yeah. When you were at the Times.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Placement of stories that I thought were more important, that should have been more prominently placed, put in the back. And, you know, it, as a result of some of the immigration coverage we used to have, we were, although we'd done it in the past, but I was, we were the first ones in Orange County to put out, some news articles shortened in Spanish.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and this was in the 80s. And I was kind of proud of that one because the immigration, they were just, immigration folks, the INS were just, they're being too a stormtrooper type, and there were some rights that people should have been known, they should know of them.
Sure, yeah.
And there was some contact information.
Various...
attorneys and
That's great.
So that was put out as to what federal agents could and could not do.
So you put that in
so
the
these
paper.
Were shortened
in the paper itself.
In the paper in Spanish.
Oh, cool.
Surrounding a story, the same story in English.
Oh,
and
nice.
Just in the middle of it.
And
just to kind of like in more informative.
Yeah.
Something the Times really, you know, would not normally do.
Yeah.
You would call it today a graphic.
Yeah.
Kind of like a little more informative, but in Spanish.
It's more, almost advocacy journalism.
We were taken to task by so many people.
Oh, I'm sure. Because that's what I try to do when I write for Alternative Press. I used to always leave contact information or put something, because I didn't want to just depress people by all the bad stuff that's happening. I wanted to give them hope.
Yeah.
And, you know, before Obama,
I
tried.
Yeah. I should have kept all my my hateful mail, but I don't.
Yeah.
Because one of the best bits of advice I ever got was from an older reporter, Gordon Grant, who I would say, man, can you believe this? And it would be just, you know, filled with profanity and vile. You know, send them back here. You yourself and your children. And I show him, he goes, you know what the best thing to do with these letters? I go, why? He goes, just throw them away. Just took the letter and put it right into the trash can. I go, thank you, Gordon.
I got in trouble somewhat for what some Albedo wrote, and I used, what was the word they used for whites in LA Times? They changed all my words to white. They didn't use white.
Anglo?
Anglo,
yeah.
So some Irish guy wrote back and said he's not Anglo. And so he wrote me a long letter. But everything got changed. And I know it's the same with Latino, right? Here, the preferred term is Latino.
Yeah.
In the East, it's Hispanic.
It's just style.
We're not
taking any kind of political stance. It's just style.
Well, they have political connotations, I suppose. Yeah. But the, there are professors here who say that Latinos don't even, you know, I mean, they don't cover the whole range of
We try to say Chicano. That's the term. But even there, people can debate with that too. So it's difficult to know.
I think the current OC Weekly has a piece, a letter from somebody saying why is a Chicano writing about Mexico, in reference to Gustavo.
Mm-hmm.
So how overall are you happy? You took? Did you take a a buyout offer or something?
Yeah, it was a layoff with a buyout offer.
Oh, yeah.
So I was at the age where it was acceptable.
You look young.
Yeah. Well, you know, 61. So, which is, that is not as fortunate as others. You know, layoffs are very dirty business.
Yeah.
And when you do 10% each year since 2000,
yeah,
and you're saying hello and goodbye to a lot of people.
You know it's coming.
Right? Yeah. It became a joke. I'm sure it's all in private industry and even in some school districts now.
It's awful.
It's, you know, it's the Friday cake. The Friday cake and the farewell. Well, who's leaving this week?
The bad news always come on Friday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Black Friday.
It seems like at the local level, like with the Independent, which is a version, you know, owned by the Times and so on, these, and I see the same thing in the Register, too. The local reporters seem to leave about after a year to go where, I don't know where they go. They go somewhere else. And some have left for my paper, four of them, and then they leave. But and just about the time when they start to get a grasp of the issues, there seems to be this revolving door, like they're sucking people in and then spitting them out. I don't know if that's what if the wages are lower than before or what's going on there. But
well, I think that's one of the stepping stones in journalism. When I began, I started a weekly in Solana Beach, and the pay was like $96 a week. Because the publisher had suffered a major fire the year before. He was getting back on his feet. And so I liked Solana Beach area.
Yeah.
Encinitas, Cardiff.
Yeah.
And
I was there yesterday at Cardiff at a party.
Yeah.
And they said that now it's become Democrat. San Diego has totally become Democrat in the last election because it's not just the military types there. It's now high-tech people going in there, so other professionals moving in.
They have that big valley there.
Yeah, and so the party was all these high-tech types.
Yeah. And to the question, it's so you go up the ranks. You know, your amount of money that you're getting paid, you bump that off the amount of frustration you get in the job if they're giving you a heck of a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And not enough hours in the day for you to do the work, and you're not getting overtime, chances are, you know, you're trying to look good to your bosses. But then at that point when the frustration, or you got to work a Saturday and make it a 6-day, and they want you back on Monday, you get one day off, or work a night shift, those frustrations mount, and then it's time to get the resume out again, especially if they're not... you know, increasing your salary as you accumulate all these hours and go on to the next rung.
Mm-hmm.
And, the big dailies are being hit hard by the recession and by the internet. But I was told by a recruiter that the job recruiter for, especially who goes to these colleges and whatnot, there's more than 1,400 newspapers that are small and medium-sized. These are still growing.
Right. That's the thing.
So if
local.
Local news. Yeah.
The local news. Yeah. So if they want careers, you know, there's nothing preventing them from graduating with a journalism degree and getting money as a journalist and then finding your next step. Doesn't always have to be newspapers.
I think they're interested in TV and all this kind of media journalism, right? I mean, probably.
Right.
But you have written a lot. The New York Times has a list of 1,447 articles you've written since 1997 alone.
Yeah.
And how many did you have to write a week?
No, there's no quota.
There's no quota.
Okay. There's no quota. It's there are some reporters who are very good writers, and they could write. It could take them weeks.
Yeah.
To do one story, or they get involved in projects. Then you also have beat reporters who
have to cover.
You cover like a city in the old days.
Yeah.
Or the county or
courthouse or something.
The courthouse or one of these big transportation agencies. You have to produce more because there's just more news coming out.
And so you're not paid per piece, obviously.
No.
It's a salaried position.
No, it's negotiated when you get hired,
and
then all things are negotiated during your tenure.
Oh,
while you're there. I mean, if you get if you do well, you get more money.
So is there regular pay raises? Or, I mean, how, is that just at the whim of the supervisor? How does that work?
Well, I got to say that since 2000, it's been a more or less just a real flat 1 to 2%, 1 to 3%, increase annually. There've always been efforts to hold the budget down.
Sure.
So nobody's going to get like a cost of living increase like the city or the county employees
unions,
are getting,
or
police officers with unions.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting huge. You know, what, 4 or 5%.
And but the
by comparison, the LA Times, you'd be lucky to get 1 to 3%.
Do they negotiate with the newspaper guild, or how does that work?
No, there's no guild.
Oh.
It's just you have to be aware of the economic times.
Oh.
And it's better to have your job or go on to another newspaper or magazine or whatever.
Yeah. So you get a pension, right?
I got a pension. I got a pension through Times Mirror, not Tribune.
Oh.
Yeah.
When they took it over, they did 401Ks, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. They took over 401Ks, and then since December with the bankruptcy, with the Chicago Tribune filing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Forgot about that.
Chicago Tribune, really Sam Zell, filing for bankruptcy. It's put a damper on everything.
I see a lot of Tribune bylines in the current LA Times.
Yeah.
Seems like they don't have enough LA Times reporters, and they're just sharing.
Yeah. They're sharing. That is something not out of the managers in Los Angeles, but more out of the people in Chicago. That along with this shared concept, the shared Washington, D.C. bureau, perhaps they may even have some sharing of foreign bureaus. That you'll see content by people whose names you've never seen.
Right.
You know, in sports, I didn't mind it. They have kind of they have a better take on basketball sometimes.
But they can't write on surfing.
Whoa.
Well, on that note,
whoa.
I want to thank you, David Reyes, for coming back to the station.
Yeah, Dan, it's my pleasure.
15 years too long. And John L., also regular guest on this program. And a former KUCI host, PA host, for News Gap. So now there will be an entire News Gap in Orange County, maybe filled by OC Voice. But thank you very much.
Thanks.
This is Dan Zhang signing off for Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show were not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. Stay tuned.